Have you lost your mind? I mean, how is it that you can disrespect a man's ethnicity when you know we've influenced nearly every facet of white America, from our music to our style of dress, not to mention your basic imitation of our sense of cool. Walk, talk, dress, mannerisms. We enrich your very existence, all the while contributing to the gross national product through our achievements in corporate America. It's these conceits that comfort me when I'm faced with the ignorant, cowardly, bitter, and bigoted who have no talent, no guts. People like you who desecrate things they don't understand when the truth is you should say, thank you, man, and go on about your way. But apparently, you're incapable of doing that. So, and don't tell me to be cool. I am cool! Racial epithets. Why does it always come down to that, huh?
We are back and we are live after some technical difficulties yesterday. I am going to assure you now we will have today. In fact, we're probably not going to work them out for another 2 days. But we are going to try our best to muddle through. That's what we do. It's Reese on the Radio. Welcome to the show on this September the 19th, 2012. It's almost near the end of the week. It's hump day, as everybody knows, that we call it here on Reese on the Radio. And it's a pleasure to have you here 1 minute after the hour. Now, yesterday during the show, I was talking about something I thought was extremely relevant. It is, how do we terrorize the media? Now, I'm saying that tongue firmly in cheek, so I want to make sure that people understand where it is that I'm coming from. Now, I'm not talking about some sort of jihad, if you will, but I think there has to be something done intellectually to make the media report the facts, the truth. Now, most people would say, hey, let's just not watch them. Nah, that's not going to work. Because if you look at CNN's ratings, I mean, they're in the toilet. They're at a 25-year low. But they will not change their direction no matter what. They won't do a thing to improve their ratings. People are stepping down. People are being fired. People are being tossed out windows, figuratively, to get off that sinking ship. Yet they will not change their direction. They refuse to be a fair and balanced, if I may quote Fox News, they refuse to be a fair and balanced news network. They understand, and I know they do, they understand how pivotal this election is. And they believe that once the president is the president of the United States again for another 4 years, that they could do anything it is that they want. They can report whatever it is that they want. They will have this utopia. So they're in it for the long haul. They are strapped in, even if it is across the proverbial bow of the ship of the Obama campaign. That's the deal with this media. But they've got to be held accountable. Now, most people will argue, well, look what the alternative media is doing. You know, and look at what their favorability is. And no one seems to talk about this. I will say that. Just speaking on, just to go off a little bit about favorability. You know, people talk about the favorability of Congress and the House of Representatives in Washington. They say that it's at 21%. But there are reports that say today that media confidence is at the same level, which in and of itself is a pretty damning indictment. Which is something that should be alarming to everyone. So as I suggested yesterday, our media to report fair and balanced and honest news. Something's got to be done. What can be done? But something must be done. Now, will it happen after this election in the event that President Obama would to lose on November 6th? Is possibly. Let's say that Mitt Romney wins. Right? Let's go in that direction. Let's say that Mitt Romney wins. and the economy starts to turn around under his leadership. More and more people get on jobs. The unemployment rate comes down astronomically. People are hiring again. More people are off the rolls, you know, off food stamps. It brings it down to a two-year low, maybe even a three-year low. The media will have to report that. And it doesn't matter whether or not they give the credit to President Obama and last term's policies. It doesn't matter. But the fact is that this will be the record of Mitt Romney. What will they do then? Will they search for scandals? Will they nitpick at everything that happens in the administration? Abso-frickin-lutely. But, I believe that they're going to have to turn around, because if the news looks positive, President Romney, that they'll have no choice but to report the facts. They'll have no choice. But one is only hopeful. Now, the radio equalizer released some many people have heard. But it's 19th. If I'm losing you, I apologize on this. Okay. Okay, we're back. His redistribution claims were some 14 years ago, back in 1998. And people are arguing whether or not that is relevant. Whether or not it's relevant. But the FR said that the challenge with Barack Obama on a radio show in Illinois that now I why they're glossing over his statements to Joe the Plumber, I believe if you spread the wealth around. The reason why they're glossing over it is because this is something that they ardently believe in, that they agree with. They believe that there should be a redistribution of wealth to take from others to give to many. And they agree with it, and so they're not going to scrutinize it. Why would they? Why would they have any interest in scrutinizing? What they find more important and more relevant than anything is to make sure that we can get mainstream America on board. And will they do it with the uneducated? Of course, they're already there. The uneducated are already there. You mean somebody's going to take from someone else to give to us? They are already on board. Our good friend F.A. Chulo over at the Real Talk Blancers agrees with this 100%. He is right on board. He said when we first started communicating with the Real Talk Blancers, they believe in doing more for their fellow man, to give of themselves. when they can do, when they're doing better. They believe in that. We all know that's bull. Because anyone who wants to start a business does not want to give up half of what they own so that other people who have not put any skin in the game, have no sweat equity, I like that term, would get some of their money for nothing, for just existing. And forget about creating an entitlement society. Forget about all that. Let's go even a little more radical here. Let me go a little more radical here. Because of these people, like the F.A. Chulos, like Derek the Bounty Hunter, like our good friend Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery. Because of these attitudes, there are people in this country who are clearly less educated than those three. Clearly less educated than those three. And I'll question their education at a later date. But what I witness and notice and see in those people is, if you believe that you can be taken care of no matter what it is that you do, just for existing, their behavior will become more and more irresponsible. You see, it's enough to have a safety net. You know, when someone makes a mistake, you know, you tell a young girl, maybe she's 19, she dropped out of high school. She gets pregnant by a guy who's got a, he's got a job, but it's, you know, it's minimum wage, maybe a little more, makes probably about $10 an hour. And they're discussing this when she gets pregnant. Don't worry, we can do this. We can survive. We got plenty of things that can help. We got people out there who are talking to them saying, look, there are ways that you can help yourself out. There are safety nets for you. And this young girl starts to find out what those things are. Oh, there's a welfare for that. Or there's a welfare for this. There's a WIC program here. There's a such and such there. And this starts to spread. They start to spread this to other people who are just like them. Oh, girl, you know, when I had such and such, we did this and that and this and that. There are things that you can do. And what I'm hearing from these people today is the same deal. They're bitter. They're angry. They're frustrated. They're not making it. They're not succeeding. Their dreams are dying. They don't believe, because they've given up, and this is who it is that they are. And I might in some ways talk about, to be talking about black people. They've been taught all their lives from their peers and their elders that you can't make it in this country anyway. The white man won't let you. Ain't nobody going to let you be that. Ain't nobody going to let you do that. You want to be a scientist, Negro? White man ain't going to let you do that. You want to be a school teacher? Can't do that. White man won't let you. You want to be an astronaut. You know how many black astronauts there are, man? Ain't many. White man ain't going to let you do that. It's a defeatist attitude. And you know, that's what it is. It goes on. Poor black boy, poor black girl sits up there and looks like, really, mom? Really, grandma? Really, granddad? Really, Uncle Raheem? The white man won't let me? What do I do? You just do what you can, boy. You get yours. You get it any way you can get it. I'm not saying that the grandparents are suggesting that these people do illegal things in order to get theirs, but there's no real structure there. There's no real plan. There's no real ideas. Just say you get yours any way you can. These people ain't going to just give it to you. You just get it any way you can. Now, I'll admit, that's a great line. You said you do what it is you got to do. Nobody's going to give you anything. That's a great mantra. Great mantra. Of course you should be telling your kids that. You do whatever it is you can. You work hard. Well, at least that's what I would say. You work hard and you get by and you do what it is that you can and you fight hard and you don't stop. But they don't tell them that. They tell them you're never ever going to make it. You just get what you can and get it there and get it any way you can. And that's it. That's it. That's the mantra. So when people hear all this garbage about Barack Obama redistributing wealth, take it from them to give to you, people like that idea. They don't even bother to ask the question, well, what are we going to get out of this deal? We're going to get a little, we're going to get a lot. They don't even bother to ask, what do we do when we need more? What do we do when we need more? Because you will, eventually. What do you think happens when you go further and further into your own personal recession? You're out of the workforce for 4, maybe 5 years. Well, you've done nothing. You've got no job experience. You'll never, ever be able to join the workforce again. Qualified. You're unqualified, and you always will be. Haven't they even thought about that? What job are you going to be qualified for after you've gotten your redistribution of other people's wealth? You just survive. Live in paycheck. You don't understand that you die.
Yo, man. Hey, you ever go to these bars, right? It's like a nice enough place, nice enough people. But the bartender thinks he's too fancy, man. You know? I'm like, hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus this shit. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night out.
So there's this bar. Everybody's like, you gotta go. I'm at the door. What's the password?
I don't know.
We entered through a phone booth or something crazy.
Oh, my God. They have the best drinks here. It's amazing.
Ooh, I saw the bartender. He looked like a nice dude. He was pouring a drink with one big-ass ice cube. I'm like, excuse me, sir. Could I get a beer? He gave me this look like, why are you even in here? I was confused. Did we start on a bad note? He's wearing waxing his mustache and a lab coat. I'm like, what's the matter? Is beer too boring? He's like, well, this cocktail dates back to pre-Civil War New Orleans.
Wow,
it's real cool, man. Could you suggest something tighter? He hands me this list that was typed up on a typewriter. I ordered something and he lit it on fire. Dude, you've been watching way too much Boardwalk Empire.
For real. Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
Yeah.
Did you have to go to college for this?
Did you?
It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus this shit. Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
What's up, man?
Did you have to go to college for this?
your game is tight. But for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night.
Simple, sir, cause I ain't nothing to muddle with. I got some burlesque dancers I'm trying to cuddle with. So whip some drinks up twice and double it.
Well, have you tried our aviation or Ramos Fizz?
Whoa. Are you even speaking English, Chief? Or rum and coke times two, capiche?
Oh, you must mean our handcrafted Cuba Libre.
If it's quick, bro, you're moving slower than instant
replay.
He dripped a half ounce of something I couldn't pronounce. And by that time, I clap a chicken straight down. I'll speak easy, boss, but I gotta call you bluff. You need to drink, dude. Can't be all that, huh? Pour the liquor in and swirl it in a circle. But you're on them things like a Shapeway commercial. I'll have a beer, guy, whenever you're done mixing. Second thought, boycott, prohibition.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus this shit. Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gottavote.org to register now. That's gottavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Resell Radio.
He said, I am the Joker. But once again, he was still walking into a movie theater that was showing the Batman.
So you're saying that this guy would have done what he has done, even if, like, Steel Magnolia
is playing out there? He just said, I'm the Steel Magnolia.
It's Resell Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
If I don't recognize your name, you're a nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. That's the guy, Michael Simon. Never forget him. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's it.
Right, right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
it. He's dressed like the chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, he is.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar. It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest types. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyist.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department, a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the
president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese. I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
And we are back. We are live. And this is the best we're going to have to do right now. So if the audio quality is a little bad, please forgive me. Nonetheless, we are here to do the show by hook or by crook, 28 minutes after the hour on this September 19, 2012. Okay. So a friend of mine, a very old friend of mine, I've known them since the 90s, sent me a very, very interesting story via email. I cannot believe the story that I'm about to report. The story comes out of Ohio. I don't know whether or not anyone saw it. I know I didn't, but when I did, I couldn't stop laughing. Okay, so this woman gets married, and her name is Valerie Sproul. Valerie Sproul, back in 2004, her husband died. It was only after her husband died that she found out that he was indeed her father.
Oh, my God.
That's right. The story starts off, and this comes from, this is the Ohio.com. This is the Akron Beacon Journal online. The next time you think you're having a bad day, imagine how Valerie Sproul felt when she discovered that her husband and her father are the same person. We'll pause here briefly to enable you to process the previous sentence. It took me a while to, says the writer. Anyway, talk about a psychological blockbuster. Not that her life had been a breeze 4 decades earlier when she had found out at age 9 that the man she thought was her father was actually her grandfather. And that a person who had been identified as a family friend was actually her mother. Sproul didn't learn until later that her mom also was one of 3 night ladies, as she terms it, who testified in the infamous 1980 corruption trial of Summit County Probate Judge James Barbuto. Why would anyone volunteer that kind of information? I don't know. Because Valerie Sproul wants to be an example. The 60-year-old Doylestown woman wants to show other folks born into miserable situations that they can still lead good, productive, fulfilling lives. Sproul has now retired. She worked for 34 years in an accounting department at Goodyear. She has 3 kids and 8 grandkids. Although Sproul has fa- believes they were brought on by the stress of discovering the longtime family secret in 2004 when her husband/father died. She's relentlessly upbeat and optimistic. For years, she overheard odd whispers. She couldn't figure out. She finally learned the truth from an uncle not long after her husband/father's death. When asked to estimate how many people know about this, she laughs and says, half of Akron. Sproul says that she confirmed the relationship with a DNA test. And if anyone doubts it, she says, she still has plenty of his DNA. Ooh, that sounds nasty. About 5 years ago, she found a hairbrush of his that somehow had become lodged under their dresser. Now, I think it's safe to say there aren't a lot of support groups out there who support groups for people who marry their fathers. Fortunately, Sproul has been working with the therapist since she found out. She praises the therapist for helping her realize that she did nothing wrong. She says, quote, I've been getting help because, God knows, if I hadn't went and aired out how I feel, I wouldn't have made it because I would have continued to stress out about this problem. Still, the pain understandably persists as she tells her tale to a writer who she doesn't know but says she trusts. An occasional drop of moisture slides down her dark brown skin toward her mouth and can't seem to avoid curling upwards in the corners, even as she dredges up the most traumatic of memories. The man in question, Percy Sproul, died in April of 1998 at the age of 60. Born in Mississippi, he worked in Akron as a truck driver and later as a parking lot attendant in Morley Health Center. He and Valerie's mother hooked up when he was only 15. We're not sure how many offspring Percy Sproul helped produce, but at one point, apparently, he figured that one of them would be a suitable spouse.
What?
Also, Valerie says that she is not 100% certain he knew because he never talked about it. She strongly believes he was aware of the taboo he had committed but was simply afraid to tell her. It's a big story, but I think I might have.
Oh, that's a backwoods Ohio.
Well, this doesn't sound like a backwoods story. It sounds like the girl didn't even know.
And she's got how many kids?
That's interesting, because I don't know whether or not he fathered any of those children, but I guess he must have. Yeah, I'm sure he must have. How many kids? She's got she's 3 kids and 8 grandkids.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a strong possibility that
incest is on the rise.
Yeah, I know. It's just,
I wonder if all the kids are okay.
You mean,
I hope they are. Like, yeah,
they're the bloodline so close.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was a very elegant way you put that there.
It was. I would probably freaking kill myself.
Oh, you would?
I mean, how devastating. Can you imagine somebody saying, you know, not only do you lose your husband.
I'm sorry.
But then you find out that your husband was really your daddy. And his ass knew.
Wait. You know what comes to mind when I hear this? I have to do it.
Alabama?
No. What comes to my mind when I read this story, now that I think about it, because it's only right that you play it, that you at least consider it. But this, in a very, very weird way, is it's very Star Wars-like. I mean, if you really think about it. Valerie, no one ever told you about your father. I am your father. That's the only thing that I can think of. I'm sorry. That's the only thing that I'm thinking about at this point.
How did it even come up that how did she find that out?
I guess through DNA.
But why was their DNA taken?
Well, I guess I guess because she says, I mean, in the story, they said that there was some rumbling going around about their story or about his story. And it seemed like there were family members who knew who he was, knew what he was doing. No one said anything. She grew up thinking that her grandfather was her actual father. They thought that her, she thought that her mother was a family friend. You know, she had no clue. I mean, this, I remember this.
How messed up of a life can you have?
I, listen.
Your mama's a whore. You're married your daddy.
Well, you say the mother's a whore based on that night person thing, right?
Yeah, that's what that means. A street walker.
Oh, is that what that means? But it appeared to me that it was, but I didn't want to assume that it was, pretending that I knew what it was when I indeed didn't.
A night walker is a kind way of saying.
I don't think I don't think they use the word night walker.
Well, what did they use?
Hold on, I'll tell you right now. They night ladies. Which, okay, yes, sounds like streetwalker. I mean, I can sum up that it's...
Red light special?
Yes, I can clearly sum up that it's a red light district reference. That's what it sounds like, but I don't know. For some other reason, that was just...
That's what it is.
It was peculiar. It was peculiar.
If it walks like a dog, barks like a dog, wags its tail like a dog,
you know,
it's a goddamn dog.
Most people use the term duck.
Whatever.
Why would she use the term dog? That almost sounds crazy. Anyway, yeah, so, you know, I thought it was an amazing story. I had no choice but to read it. As soon as I read it, I went, well, that is just, like, bizarre. And
that is sad.
It makes for Jack Nicholson went through something similar. No, not this similar, but not too dissimilar. Jack Nicholson grew up believing that his aunt was the woman who was his mother. He grew up thinking that she was his aunt, I believe. It was something like that. The woman that he grew up with, he thought was his biological mother, but it turns out that it was his grandmother or something like that. So I'm certain. I'm almost certain it's the Jack Nicholson story. And someone will correct me about it. No, I don't think so. They do not think so. You do know that. It was Jack Nicholson's home where the Roman Polanski rape took place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, you did tell you. Yeah, he's got a very, very weird past, if you really think about it, Jack Nicholson. Yeah, but this story just really, I found it alarming. It caught me off guard, so that was why I had to read it, because I thought it was interesting. Anyway, we'll take a break when we come back. What is the story that I wanted here? This was, oh, yeah, the... The report for Fast and Furious has actually come out, but more importantly, DNA results of George Zimmerman's gun were released. I think it was yesterday, and it was reported on today. We'll talk about that, of course, when we get back, so stick around. It's Reese on the Radio. We will return. I wonder what the hell everybody else is. I guess they heard it. The audio was so messed up. Hey, isn't it wrong? It's on the network. I love it when you call me Big Papa. It's so wrong.
Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle, and this is Afterburner. The Rolling Stones wrote, "You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need." And with Mitt Romney finally taking my advice and selecting Paul Ryan as his running mate, conservatives who make up the bulk of the Republican Party, only to be ignored and insulted at every opportunity, it seems, not only get what we want, but we also get what the country needs. First, let's go to what we want. Conservatives understand, especially Tea Party conservatives, understand that the existential threat to this nation is not Al-Qaeda or a nuclear Iran or illegal immigration or crumbling infrastructure or falling education scores or global warming or killer bee infestation. It's none of that. The only thing out there that has the power to destroy our way of life, to utterly render our lives unrecognizable, is the impending worldwide economic collapse that is coming and will happen, and sooner rather than later, if we do not get this insane, pathological, terminal spending under control. Now, to date, there's only been one politician on the national scene. Think of that. Of the 535 Americans that actually live in a democracy, the 435 House members and the 100 senators who actually get to have a say in what goes on out there, out of all of them, only one, has a serious plan to stop this train before it plummets off the rails and goes over the cliff. And that one person is Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party in 2012. And the Democrats are terrified of this guy. Terrified. Because simply listening to him speak for 20 or 30 seconds utterly flummoxes them. All Republicans, you see, have to wear one, if not two, or all three of three labels. Republicans are either evil, stupid, or old. So let's play along. John McCain, old. Sarah Palin, stupid and probably evil. George Bush, stupid and definitely evil. Dick Cheney, old and evil. Ronald Reagan, old and stupid. Newt Gingrich, old and evil. And of course, Mitt Romney, who's clearly neither old nor stupid, therefore has to be painted as triply evil. But what do they do with Paul Ryan? He's not old, he's young. He's brilliant, he's not stupid, and he's likable and agreeable, so he's not evil. So they'll have to paint him as an extremist. But now the question becomes, who's the real extremist on the American spectrum? The two Boy Scouts? Or dog-eating Mr. You Didn't Build That. Ryan fires up conservatives the way Sarah Palin did for McCain, but Ryan will not be Palinized. Let's see Katie Couric ask Paul Ryan what magazines he reads. He'll probably say something like, Katie, you know, I spend 15 hours a day tearing apart 3,000-page health care bills, running statistical analyses of their pluses and minuses, comparing them with best and worst case estimates of revenues and shortfalls, and then I assign relative financial efficiency and effectiveness weighted variables to assess the best possible outcome. So I don't get a lot of time to read magazines, but when I do, I kind of like Field and Stream. Palinize that. Now, I think Paul Ryan is the best way to win, but I know that Ryan is the best way to lose. I think we're going to win this election. I really do. And if we do, Paul Ryan on the ticket means some form of the Ryan plan, and that means a mandate to get the spending under control. But if we lose, we need to lose with the Ryan plan, because if we lose, it will mean that America, unlike Wisconsin, has not yet faced up to the full scale of the mismanagement, greed, waste, and corruption that have bankrupted the richest nation in the history of the world. I'm not sure that a Romney-Ryan administration will be able to defuse this debt bomb, but I am utterly convinced that under Obama, too, that bomb will explode. We stand on the razor's edge, and the American people need to hear it, and they will hear it now. And if we are still a great people, we will do what the people of Wisconsin did. We'll follow belt-tightening plan, we'll take our medicine, and we'll start to get better. Or we'll do what Greece and France did a few months ago. We'll vote for pie. Everybody loves pie. Just keep the pie coming. When the pie stops coming and money has no value anymore, the American people will need to know that they had a choice, and they also need to know who was warning them and telling them to take their medicine, because then we will not have gotten away with a haircut and a bitter taste in our mouths. Then we'll be fighting for our lives, and that's when we will really need courageous, even-tempered, non-rockstar adults like Paul Ryan, and the courageous, even-tempered, non-rockstar adult like the man that chose him as his running mate.
Right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is September the 19th, 2012. You confused me again. Of course, forgot to press the mute button. Another classic thing that I do all the time. Anyway, we're back. It's an interesting thing. I talked about it at the top of the hour about this audio of Barack Obama in 2001. This is, of course, in complete contrast with the whole argument, oh, it was 14 years ago when he talked about redistribution at Loyola College. Well, this is then 3 years earlier. This brings it up to 11 years. 11 years ago. No longer 14 years ago. He does it again. I've heard the audio before. I don't know whether or not you have, but I'll play it for you anyway. And you just tell me. Look, it cannot be denied, as I said on my blog, on ReSonRadio.com, it cannot be denied he is a redistributor as a president of the United States. Here's that audio.
Dispossessed people, so that I would now have the right to vote. I would now be able to sit at the lunch counter and order and design a record pay for that deal cake. But the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And but to that extent, it's radical, as I think people try to characterize the wrong thing. It wasn't that radical.
It wasn't that radical. So in 2001, and he's talking about, and again, to give you the context that he's talking about, he's saying that, you know, look, the Supreme Court, you know, they go to court to get equal rights, you know, Brown versus the Board of Education, you know, all those things. He said, but the civil rights movement didn't do was find out a way to redistribute wealth. And he was saying that that should have been part of the template of going to court. So this has always been who he is. It is who he is. It cannot be denied anymore. And he needed to knock it off with a ridiculous argument. On the phone with us now is our good friend Sally D.
Not much. I was, you know, having a nice black ale. I'm setting the mood. You know, it's all about the ritual. And then you get into that incest story. You totally blew it for me. So I'm just going to have the next.
I'm so sorry, but
I don't know where that came out of left field. You were talking about Romney 1 minute. I think I just lost my attention for a moment. I come back and I'm listening to that and I'm thinking, man, this guy can just mix and match all the stories. It doesn't matter what you bring up, you just run with it. I love it.
It was just, and for me, when I read it today, I just went, no way that this happened. It was just too interesting. It was just too interesting to pass up because I knew it was just one of those rare stories. I mean, come on. It's in Akron, Ohio, and I'm hoping that FAQ. So again,
what's more unbelievable to you, that story or the fact that we're sitting here talking about Mitt Romney and the comment he made to the private group of the 47%? I am blown away that this is the story we're talking about when, I mean, okay, take Obama's comment 4 years ago. If you just take the two comments, forget the timeline, forget the candidate, which is the more radical comment? Clearly Obama's comment. Nobody cares about that. That's irrelevant.
You know, that's the part that makes it so alarming. Now, it's funny because NBC News, today, and I don't know if you read this report, NBC News had refused to air the redistribution comments from 1998. And Andrea Mitchell on her show on MSNBC said, and I quote, "We have not authenticated the tape yet."
What?
No, it gets better. It was already reported in the Washington Post that they called the White House, and the White House confirmed that it was President Obama.
Dude, we've
but
had
they said
training.
They hadn't authenticated. But yeah. Then it gets better. But then it gets better, Sal. Well, here's where it gets even better. Now, everyone has been playing the audio of what Barack Obama said in October of 1998. Well, on NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, in their report with Andrea Mitchell, who reported on the story, they led the story by saying, "More trouble, more backlash for Romney." In the midst of that story, brought up the Obama redistribution story. But guess what? Guess what NBC News had that no one else had? The actual video.
Wow. Yep.
So I couldn't believe that they had the video. They're talking about authenticating, and I'm sure that when Andrea Mitchell says, "Hey, we can't authenticate the tape," someone called up the station or emailed them and said, hey, dumbass, here's the video. Tell me if this looks like Barack Obama or not. Assuming the thing worked.
I got to get your take on this, because here's another piece of this puzzle that I'm not getting. What am I missing here? So he says, I hear the comment, I understand the beef about the 47%, I'll never change their minds because they're relying on government. I get that the fact that it wasn't a polished comment, it wasn't the venue where he probably felt he needed to be, you know, super careful. It's still stupid
right.
to a degree if you're concerned about such things. But my question is, what about the Romney supporters? If you're a Romney supporter, how does this change your view? I've heard people on the radio say, you know, I was going to vote for him, but, you know, I was injured and I've been collecting for the last year. And, you know, I can't vote for him now. He's not referring to the person who's needed the assistance in a real time of need, or the guy that comes out of the military, or the person
mm-hmm.
who's disabled. That wasn't the intent of the comment. Are people really just not listening? What's your take on that?
Here's my take on it. There are two very important things, Sal, about these comments that I have observed and I've gone over in my mind 1,000 times. But think of it from this way. What Mitt Romney did at a private gathering, he did something that his supporters applauded because he did one thing. He sounded like me or Rush Limbaugh when talking about Obama supporters. He sounded like a radio host on a conservative radio show. He said, these people are bums. Those people who love 47%, these people are bums. These people think they're victims. These people are never, ever going to vote for me. And that's what he was telling those people. He's like, look, if you're looking at these polls and you see me at 46 and you see him at 47, the reason why is because I'm never going to get those people. And he's saying it in a very, very off-the-cuff, very open and honest radio talk show host. Like, guys, really, really telling the truth to the people. Now, here's the one thing that the media has done with this. Is that while they're trying to create a straw man by saying, they're not making an argument that's saying, Mitt Romney thinks you are a freeloader and a victim. But what they're not asking on top of that is, are you an Obama supporter? And how does he insult someone when he's talking about the people who are not going to vote for him anyway? In no way was he suggesting that he was going to change your mind. Being caught out there making claims like this about Obama supporters, they weren't going to turn around and just going to go, oh, you know, I was thinking about voting for you, Mitt Romney, man, but now I can't do it because you just called me a freeloader. No, he was talking directly to those people going, you're never going to support me. Also, he's caught doing. You're never going to support me because you think you're a victim because the person you are rooting for, the person that you are going to vote for, told you that you're a victim, and you believe him. And he told you that he's going to take care of you, and if you believe his narrative, I'm never going to get your vote. So what's so wrong with that? So the media has created a straw man here. Now they're saying, oh, he's talking about everybody. People are putting up things on Facebook. They're saying, which one of us is the 47%? I've already told you, people who believe that Obama is going to get them other people's wealth. That's it.
So, you know, I'm wondering and I'm thinking, and this is a political risk, so I'm not sure why he took it or his campaign took it. I see this as something that nobody's really kind of said, so I could be way out there wrong. But I see this as he makes this statement, and in doing so, he takes that segment of the voter populace that he knew he was never going to get. But they're the same kind of person that if you confront them and say something about them, they say, I'm not like that. I don't do that. There's a lot of people that if you say something about them that's maybe true, but they don't want to acknowledge it, they'll go out of their way to prove you wrong. Is it possible he did this knowing that what it would do is those people would say, yeah, but he's not talking about me. That's not me. And psychologically, they vote for him because they don't want to be associated with that 47%.
And I believe that that's exactly what it did. That's why I said it was a great comment. It was an off-the-cuff comment. I don't give a damn about what this whole thing about how well he articulated it. He said, look, I'm never going to get those people. Those people believe in Barack Obama, and that's who it is that they're going to vote for. Those people are shilling for him because they blindly believe that he's the guy. They don't want to hear my ideas. They're not interested in my ideas. And think about the other comments he made about the Hispanic vote and the African-American vote. You think Mitt Romney, people have said Mitt Romney needs to talk to African Americans if he's really serious about change in this country. And then he goes to Philadelphia and the mayor, Mayor Nutter, is outside of the venue and they're protesting him being there?
Right.
I mean, so you get my point. It's like he can do no good trying to reach out to these people anyway because they are dead set on reelecting Barack Obama.
So, equally, I mean, no one could reach me and say that I, you know, convince me to vote for Obama. So I get that. But honestly, I think this could be, it's either political suicide or it's a genius move to carry over another 3 or 4% of the vote. I don't know how it plays out. I don't buy the media saying that the polls have swayed 8 points in Obama's favor since, you know, we had that discussion months ago about the polling.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, oh, you know what, don't believe the polls, don't believe the polls. I don't want to believe the polls because there's all sorts of things that go into it. You know, the way they balance out Democrat versus Republican and who they're polling, who they're calling. But at the end of the day, you don't see really consistent polls showing Romney in front. And granted, the people that control, although I don't know. I don't know about Rasmussen and this other poller, you know, if they have left leanings or have interests in the left that would lean the left.
I would say if you read the polls, which is always important to do, I always say that these internal polls, when they actually break them down, and I'm gonna bring White Mike in a second. Mike, thanks for holding. But if you look at these polls, Rasmussen, not too long ago, I think it was a day ago, got criticized by the Washington Post because the polls that they'd done had skewed Democrats, Republicans, and independents evenly. They didn't do this whole poll. Now, if you go to all of these other polls, like NBC polls, you go to the Quinnipiac poll, you go to all these polls, then you find out that the polls are skewed. They went to 37% Democrats, 26% Republicans, 7% Independents, and those polls put Barack Obama 6 points ahead. And
I don't know that you can call that skewed. If you take Massachusetts, what do you think the balance is there of Democrat versus Republican? It's probably what?
But see, that's a different poll because I would make the argument, of course, you skew those polls based upon the demographics of your state. But these are national polls. And if you're doing a national poll, well, you know that regardless of what anybody tells you, in this country, 51% consider themselves conservative in this country. It is it's a center-right country across the board. So when Rasmussen and Quinnipiac and Gallup do these polls, and you find out that some polls are skewed evenly and then some polls skew more Democrats than they do Republicans, you know, 19% difference in Democrat versus Republicans in these polls, of course it's going to be favorable to Barack Obama. That's why I say don't trust the polls unless the results – Rasmussen is the only poll I'll view, the only one.
I think we got to get Mike's take on this.
Yeah, let's bring in Mike. Thank you. Thanks for holding, Mike. How are you tonight? Mike, you there? Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
I just don't get it, man. I mean, look, I don't have a problem with some people not paying taxes. If you're scraping along, you know, flipping burgers at McDonald's and you can barely make it, yeah, okay, maybe we give you a pass on taxes. But 47% of the country doesn't pay any income tax? How the hell does that make it? What kind of scam are these people pulling that they're not paying any tax? They're not contributing at all? I mean, not a bit? How?
Well, I'll tell you how, because if you're making below, what is it, under $27,000 a year, you don't file federal income taxes.
Jesus, $27,000 that's not an insignificant amount of money. If you're a single person...
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Look, I saw this one great story in 2009. The New York Times was did an expose on this this family where the husband worked two jobs and the wife worked a job, and they were it was a story about low income housing, and they were trying to break down how much money or how little money this particular family made. And how it was hard for them to make ends meet. But as I'm reading the story, I'm getting their numbers, and it turns out that the guy on one job is pulling in $800 a week before taxes. The girl makes $600 a week before taxes. And his second job is part-time, where he's pulling in about $350. But yeah, they were talking about how this family was struggling to get housing, and I'm looking at this number and I'm going, wait a minute, for the money that they're making a week, they can pay 1 month's rent in a nice apartment in Greenwich Village.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, the most I've ever made with the jobs I've had is I grossed $42,000 one year, and as
okay.
a single guy, dude, pulling in 42 grand here, I was doing well. Okay, I didn't hurt for anything. I had toys and money in the bank. And 42 in some places is not a ridiculous amount of money.
Well,
you know, nobody would say you make...
You couldn't be in New York with $42,000. You couldn't live in Manhattan with $42,000 a year.
In Florida, $80,000.
Yeah, cost of living is a little different now itself.
But guys, there's another element to this that we can't avoid. I think it's the biggest part of it. That is the under-the-table labor in this country, legal or illegal, that doesn't contribute back into the pool. So
also true.
But yet that doesn't show up. So a lot of people are working under the table, and maybe some of it's over the table. You know, so they don't. All those people making the 25 could be well making 60, but they're doing so under the table. So 25 shows up, they're not paying tax, whatever.
I'll tell you what I never ever liked about that story, about that factor, especially the fact that, you know, there are a lot of people, forget about the people who are being paid under the table, and so much even the illegals who make their money and send, you know, what, $2 out of every $4 they make back to their home country. What makes that, for me, so difficult to deal with in all of that is that the argument is always constantly made by these people. It's like, oh, well, they're doing the jobs that Americans don't want to do. I look at this economy today, and you ask any one of those people who have a hard time finding a job, and you pay them a living wage or even a decent wage, $8, $9 an hour, I'll bet you that people would come out of the rafters to take those jobs, whether it was picking tomatoes or, you know, or working the fields in a, you know, working in a cornfield, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
I know blacks would probably pick cotton, for crying out loud.
People would damn sure do construction work, and that's what the Mexicans started taking over. They were doing drywall.
Right.
I know damn well that, you know, blue-collar Americans were doing drywall.
You know, when I worked in a tile company, I had never done that work before, ever. I knew nothing about the tile industry. Walked in there, did the job, got paid $16 an hour. First time I'd ever done the gig. Started at 14, 6 months later I was at $16 an hour. That was back in 2007. And I took the job because I needed it. Of course, back in my stuck-up 20s, I looked at that job and said, I'm not working in a damn warehouse. But sure enough, when the time came and I needed a job, I took that damn job.
Hey, but 16 an hour is nothing to sneeze at, man. You know, that's a decent, livable wage.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So the problem is, though, if you can't get out there and speak about illegal immigration and people working under the table because you know you won't get voted in, it's also hard to pass legislation to deal with that because you'll get voted out. And so this problem just keeps going on and on and on. You have this underground economy that never feeds back into the system. And I'm willing to bet you this has gotten worse and worse because, as you've said, I just had a roof done on my house a year and a half ago. When I looked at the guys he brought on the job, I looked at them and I said, honestly, do I really think maybe half of these guys are legit? Maybe? And it's unfortunate because we do have Americans that need this work. But what do you do? How do you stop it? And I think it ties back to this 47% thing. I mean, a lot of that, there are people who legitimately need help, and we should give it to them.
But wait a minute. Here's an important thing about that 47%. If the President of the United States is constantly telling people on the campaign trail in 08 and now in 2012, talking about fair share, talking about how you are not getting it. And when you say to someone that you're not, people paying their fair share, talking about doing more and more for you, the middle class, or you're the one that's getting screwed, there's not enough being done for you, I'm trying to work for the middle class is suffering. This is all language of victimhood. That's all it is.
Cool. It's language of communism, dude. It's going after the proletariat.
Oh, yeah, but no,
going after the bourgeoisie.
Right. And without even being said, that's absolutely fact. But the bottom line is, when Obama is talking to those people, most of them who are too ignorant to recognize that this is socialism do know that this is a language of victimhood. That what he's saying to us is, yeah, that guy's doing it to me. That guy, he's taking, he has this sort of mantra of the rich only got richer by taking from the middle class. And Romney, he's going to do it again. He's going to give the wealthy more tax breaks, and that's going to cut you out. And it's a language of victimhood. But that being said, here's a guy who comes flat out and just says, look, those people think that they're victims. And why? Because he's telling them that they are, and they believe him. That's why they support him. They wouldn't be supporting him if they didn't believe him. So all he did was tell the truth, and the only reason why the media is upset about this, and the only reason why they would be, is because of political correctness. You never tell a victim that they're a victim. We only use victim when it's relevant. We use victim when we need sympathy. But you can't call us a victim. We are the only ones who are allowed to use that word.
Did you hear that Michelle Obama gave some interview where she said that Barack has been suffering along with the rest of us? And this is the same time that he's going to a $40,000 a plate fundraiser at the 40-40 Club with Jay-Z and Beyonce. They had a display of 350 bottles of $850 a bottle with the rappers call it Ace of Spades champagne.
Yeah. Yep.
So this is Mr. 99%? This is the man of the common people?
There's another aspect.
I love the way she talks about him suffering and them talking about sacrifice all the time. And right blatantly in the face of the American people, vacation, fly all around the globe. Like I said, if you want to really, really make me laugh, how about this? Go to a food bank fundraiser, right? Go to a food bank, right, where you're supposed to be serving the needy food. Show up there with a pair of $535 sneakers.
This guy is a multi-millionaire. Barack Obama is worth at least $30 million. Why is he taking a presidential salary if he's so concerned about the poor? Why doesn't he just not take his salary? $400 grand a year, but he's still taking his salary.
Crying out loud, even Bloomberg did that.
Yeah, he's still stacking money. He's piling up those dead presidents.
How much of this election is about fear, though? I mean, I got to tell you, I was at work today. A conversation with a guy. We have a pool of 100 contributors, we'll call them. These people are pretty, they're professionals. I see fear in people's faces, and they act on fear. They do silly things out of fear because they're afraid of either losing their job or being, treated. They like using that word. The bottom line is, I think a lot of this election is based on fear, and I don't know how many people are willing to vote against that human instinct of fear. So you vote in an Obama, there's this artificial safety net that'll be there for you. A lot of people buy that. And so they vote for Obama based on that human instinct. If you're fighting that human instinct, that's not an easy thing to beat. And things are starting to look so bleak. I think that may be what Romney's up against. It's not the man.
Yeah, but you know, I want to look at that from a broader scope, because if indeed the word fear is to be attributed here, because I'll even put this on the conservative side. What I believe that people who are blatantly going to vote for Barack Obama, I don't believe that their motivation is fear. This is what I believe that motivation is. Their motivation is to, they've clearly understood that right now there is everything wrong with rich people, and it's about punishment. Rich people, people who have money, those people are the enemy. And I believe that their outlook, their aspect of this election is you're gonna go for the guy who seems to care about people or the guy who only cares about the rich. It's not about fear for them. I think that it's drawing enemy lines. You know, there's an enemy line here. This guy's for the rich. He's not for the rest of us like us. And you watch that Jay Leno clip when Dennis Miller was on that got a lot of rounds on the internet when – Jay Leno even says, you know, I think people like Obama because, you know, he seems like, you know, he cares about the people. He, you know, he seems to be a people person, you know, and Mitt Romney on the other hand seems out of touch. That is the sort of dialogue that's always brought up when you're talking about President Obama. Forget his policies. This guy seems to care. He'll get around to it, but he really cares about us. Mitt Romney, nah, that guy's a rich guy. He doesn't care about us. Now, if you look at it from the conservative side, it is abject fear. I mean, if you really think about it, you ask any person, I mean, even Rush Limbaugh, who most would consider the loudest mouth, the most radical, the sort of tough guy in the room, so to speak, verbally, this guy is quaking in his boots if President Obama's reelected. And you can hear it in his voice. You can hear it in his diatribe.
I'm terrified of the guy. I mean, aren't you? I don't like Mitt Romney. I mean, I don't think he's the guy at all. I mean, he is my least favorite of the candidates, except maybe Rick Santorum. And that's just because Rick Santorum was a freaking nutball. But I'm willing to bite the bullet and vote for Mitt Romney because, if nothing else, I think that other countries are going to have a little more respect for him than Obama. I mean, have you seen what's going on with China and Japan?
Yes.
This is insanity, what's going on.
Why
over
is
there?
That happening? That's happening because they think President Obama's a pussy.
That's absolutely right.
Well, they know he won't do anything, and the worst part about it is that what he'll do is sit idly by as a president. He will sit idly by. He has blatantly avoided the media. I say, won't go to the press course. I don't have to do this press conference stuff. Jay Carney, go out there and spin. I'm not talking to anybody. And when people want to know, what are you going to do about this situation? Is there something you want to do here? Is there something you're going to do there? And the whole idea for him as a president is to just pretty much stonewall. Yeah, if it comes to that, we'll do something. I don't know exactly what it is we're going to do. We'll just do it. I've never seen an administration in my lifetime lie as blatantly and subvert and change their story as much as I've seen this administration do and then not be held accountable. That's the part that freaks me the hell out.
I can almost understand saying, look, we're not going to get involved in Israel's war with Iran. Because, okay, Israel has been kind of a shady ally at best. You know, they've spied on us. They sank one of our ships during the Six-Day War. They've given military tech to China. Okay, there's a reason for that. But Japan has been nothing but a steadfast ally since the end of World War II. Japan has been there for us, and we're going to turn our back on Japan or Taiwan?
I don't think we will. But at the end of the day, the Israel issue, it's not about Israel. It's about what happens if we don't. What really happens in that region? You know, if we don't do something to make sure the oil flow comes through that Strait of Hormuz, if we don't ensure that, you know, this thing doesn't become a global conflict, because you know, if Israel goes after Iranian military sites, Iran is not going to worry where they hit.
They're just going to start lobbing missiles in. And some of them are going to get in, and it's going to get into populated areas, and Israel's response will then be to hit Iran's cities. As soon as that happens, this becomes something that it's out of the bottle. The genie's out of the bottle, and then we may be looking at a different world within, months.
I think for sure, no matter what happens, Iran is going to make the Strait of Hormuz unnavigable. You're not going to be able to get through. Nobody's going to run a tanker through if Iran can sink it. And Iran can pretty much control that strait. You know, we're sending in minesweepers or whatever, but it's not about minesweepers. It's not about mines. It's about anti-ship missiles. And Iran has best in the world. So Iran has stuff there's no defense against.
That's right.
We have a warship there. It's got about 40 fighter jets on there. In fact, I believe today I saw a report that they've got more fighter jets on this one ship than the entire Iranian Air Force.
Doesn't matter. All it takes is one sunburned missile to sink that ship.
Yeah, the strait is too thin in certain areas, and so what can happen is you could have a small boat or a gunboat come off the side of one of these things, and before you can react, you can have a lot of there's no way to prevent that kind of stuff. There's no way.
If you Google the term sunburn missile, the sunburn missile, or as the Russians call it, the Moskvit missile, is the top line Russian anti-ship missile. It does something like Mach 3, like 50 feet off the deck, and it zigzags. By the time they launch it, it's at the ship. You can't stop it. It's unstoppable. It carries enough of a payload to sink an aircraft carrier.
Would you know what it does? It actually explodes, the majority of them, I don't know about this specific one, it explodes under the ship and creates a vacuum. It doesn't actually even hit the ship. On the bigger ships, these missiles create a vacuum, and the ship actually cracks under its own weight.
It's indefensible, and they've got hundreds of them, and they've got land-to-land missiles by the thousands. They can lob missiles into Israel and destroy that country. It doesn't matter. I mean, unless Israel's going to break out a nuke and start nuking people, that conflict has no good end.
And this is a guarantee.
Yeah, I don't think for either side.
One country has 70 million people.
Yellow.
One has two.
Oh.
There he is.
We said one country has 70 million. He said the other has two.
Yeah.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I think that if in any way whatsoever Israel were to be attacked, there's nothing stopping Benjamin Netanyahu from responding in a nuclear way.
Then what happens? I mean, then do the Russians get involved? Do the Russians start nuking Israel?
Who start getting involved? Well, first of all, I don't know if China would get involved, but I believe China would be the first to be involved.
Well, you know, there are Russian scientists working at the Iranian nuclear facilities. So how's Russia going to take to their people getting killed?
I agree with you here. I believe the other way around. If Iran were to be attacked by Israel, Russia would respond, and so would China. But listen to what I'm saying. If Russia were to put themselves in a position where they were in war with Israel, I do not believe that Iran would find that as a provocation. You understand what I'm saying? It's like Iran wouldn't step up to support or retaliate for something that happened in Russia, where Russia, on the other hand, would do it for Iran.
Well, I don't know if the Israelis are crazy enough to poke the Soviet bear. You know what I mean?
No, I don't believe that. Of course not.
I mean, if you read your history of Russia, the Russians themselves are not super fond of Jewish people.
No, of course.
What with the pogroms and the 30 million people killed under socialism, which was kind of, started by Jewish folk, they got a lot of beef. So I don't know if they want to poke the Russians or not. You got to figure, man, how many people did the Russians lose in World War II? Like 20 million people?
Yeah.
they don't have a problem with losing citizens in a war.
Yeah, it's, you know, I always harken back to Napoleon in July. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't see good things, man. But if his war kicks off, if they manage to spark something there, you think your gas prices are tough now? Wait.
Oh. Yeah. Forget about the gas prices. I'll go even further than that. I believe that there will be a domestic issue in this country. And look, people may have complained, and even though it was no, like, you know, it wasn't all that many, but there were so many anti-Muslim attacks in the United States post September 11th. Not that they were ever warranted, but you clearly understood the reasons why people were outraged and they were looking at these people and saying, you know, you sons of bitches, blah, 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 blah. But if something like this were to kick off to the point where it really, really turned into a war, I believe in this country that people would be so outraged and so fearful that their response would be to either attack first to avoid somebody getting an idea that says, hey, you know, we're going to get these people while they're sitting in our homes. I have a strong feeling of that.
Hey, look, I'm not a fan of the Muslims. Okay? I think that, you know, people talk about Islam like it's a religion. No, not really. Islam is a political and social movement also.
Mm-hmm.
Islam
mm-hmm.
wants to run the world. They want to dominate everything. And they talk about these moderate Muslims. Well, where the hell are these guys? Why aren't they standing up against these crazy assholes? They're not. You know, you
right.
see thousands of people rioting in the streets, but I don't see hundreds of thousands standing up and saying, hey, you assholes, go away.
And do you ever notice these moderate Muslims, when they're asked directly whether or not they support, you know, Hamas attacks, they'll say, well, you know, I don't want to go there, but, you know, if Israel, they refuse to call out these kind of attacks as being something that's out of line.
You know,
so they may
I
be
think
moderate.
That,
I call them quiet.
I think the average Muslim male probably wants Sharia, because Sharia is a good deal for a Muslim guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, you get to have
Absolutely.
As many wives as you want. You run the show. You don't take any crap from your women. You are a king. You know? So I think they all want to do it. I mean, they're wacky as hell, man. There are places in London right now where there's heavy Muslim population. They're putting up signs on streetlights that says you're either in a Sharia-controlled zone. They've got a list of stuff that's not allowed there, like no drinking, no loud music, no smoking, no gambling, no scantily clad women, and that's in England.
So you should come to one conclusion.
You probably shouldn't have them around in your Western country because they're not compatible.
The conclusion
with
is the West has no balls.
Well, yeah,
yeah,
the West has no balls. Hey, if it was up to me, buddy, we'd be closing them down and kicking them out and not allowing any Muslims in this country.
We're talking about
it was up to you. I think you'd deport Reese.
No, I like Reese.
Well,
but I mean,
Reese is, I was told by a close source that Reese is really Jewish.
Yes, but that goes without saying. Let me say this. Mike, it's interesting you say that you would kick them out. Now, most people would find that to be extreme, but here's why I agree with you. You know? This would be what I would consider the antithesis of camps, if you get my meaning. You know, you understand what I'm saying?
It's like, we have enough trouble with religious wackos here already without importing more religious wackos.
Right.
You mean, I
yeah,
do
maybe
help.
Think
yeah,
that in
real
this country
second,
there
who
are people who want to destroy America from within.
Okay, I believe that they're more and more here today than ever. I believe that their whole attitude about this country is to find a way to destroy it. It goes without.
I mean, part of it was to change the immigration laws back in the 60s from quotas to let in the third world.
Yeah, that was under Teddy Kennedy. I mean, there used to be a law that said you had to import most of your people from developed nations. They had to come from Europe. And
you could not be a charge on the taxpayer.
Yeah, and now, you know, we import Somalis. I mean, that's what gets me, man. You import Arabs who are kind of like modern people, fine.
Well, do you remember when Pat Buchanan said the same thing a few years ago and everyone jumped on him when he said, let's face it, what the hell is Africa given to America compared to Europe?
Nothing.
Yeah.
You're dealing with a people who, when the colonials showed up, hadn't even figured out farming or the wheel.
That, you know, again, another case where someone said something that was absolutely true, and people jumped on him for telling the truth. It's another classic case. It's like, you know, but asking the question is even more ridiculous. You guys remember that famous debate, George Stephanopoulos during the primaries with the Republican candidates, and Newt Gingrich said that the Palestinians are a fake people. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's that there is no Palestine. There is no such place as Palestine. And people were literally stunned, or at least the media was stunned, that he would say it. It's like there's no place called Palestine. It never has been. There's no such thing as Palestinian people. The people were outraged, but then they were forced the next day to try to not just explain it, but then spin it to where, well, he's technically right, but we acknowledge that they're a people. Like, I don't give a crap whether or not you acknowledge there are people. Is what he said 100% true? And you can't deny it. It is true.
Reese, would you agree that China is a totalitarian nation?
Absolutely.
Then you would agree that nothing goes on in that country of any sort unless the government knows about it or approves of it.
Well, let's just say this. I believe that
I'm getting to something with this.
I know you are. What I would suggest is that the government turns a blind eye to anything that doesn't directly affect them.
The government profits from every business in that country.
The point is, when the American ambassador's car was attacked today in China, that tells you something. That they can say, screw you, Barack, and we don't need you or your approval. So screw off. And it's also a message to Japan that don't depend on the American nuclear umbrella because they're not going to come and help you.
Yeah, he's weak. They know he's weak.
Obviously, the administration's weak, but you know everybody knows that the big dog in the room is distracted, and they're going to play. You know, they're going to go after the food bowl every time the dog ain't looking. That's what's going on right now. We're engaged. We're leveraged. We're committing ourselves in areas we need to revisit. You know, I didn't vote for Ron Paul because I thought he was a little too far for me on some of his views. But at the end of the day, you know, we got to get back to protecting our borders, manufacturing in this country, and I don't know that you have a candidate that's illegal issue. Do we have the stones to kick illegals out of this country?
Well, what good is it to be in Afghanistan and all over the friggin' world if you can't protect the U.S.-Mexican border from a narco state?
That's right.
Couldn't agree more. I was agreeing with Dennis. It's like we cannot, you know, we're never, ever going to be able to protect these borders as well. The whole idea is, look, I've never seen anything that remotely suggests to me that President Obama is not trying to just get our troops home and protect us here at home. I don't see that. I look at this Department of Homeland Security. I look at this Department of Justice. I look at exactly what it is that they're doing on this front about keeping people safe. When you have a president who is literally not just dropped the ball, but he's sort of become really lenient on certain policies about immigration in this country, that was the biggest sign that, look, I'm just tearing down the fence at our border. You know, we're just going to allow people to stay here, grant them amnesty, allow them to come into this country, and at the same time, we're bringing our troops home. In essence, it's just saying, look, man, we're open for business, so whether you want to come here and live or come here and bomb us.
The Israeli airline El Al hasn't had a hijacking since that
raid on Entebbe thing, you know, where they took the plane to Uganda, where Idi Amin was. Because the Israelis run an actual logical airline security program. Basically what it is, if you're a Muslim, they jack you. They don't do that here. You've been to an airport? I've watched them frisk 80-year-old grandmas.
It's political correctness gone amok.
You don't need this.
We've become a slave to political correctness.
You just need to find Arabs and search them. You know?
And how
like the old saying goes, not all Arabs are terrorists, but all terrorists are Arabs.
What the hell are we needing TSA for? In a real free market economy, you would be able to pick your own security if you're the airline. And as the customer, you pick the airline that you feel has the best security for your needs.
Hey, how come I can't go to the airport an hour before boarding and buy a plane ticket with cash?
I've done it, but they just put you through extensive search when you do, because I've done it before. What makes me laugh about that, though? I'll tell you what makes me laugh about that whole thing. When I look at the people who work for the TSA, right, when I used to live in Queens just recently, at JFK Airport, because all the TSA people would ride a bus and take it to the train and then come all the way into Manhattan. I would see these TSA agents, you know, sitting on waiting for the train late at night. You know, these guys didn't differ to me in view than the guy who works security at the Family Dollar. I mean, these people were just
they're hiring the bottom of the barrel.
Was airport security out of high school, 16-year-old kid watching the X-ray machine for weapons, and I'm going to tell you right now. They fired three people in front of me because the FAA got weapons through the screener. Now, since that time, it's TSA. But let's face it, the level of quality that they're getting, I don't know that it's, you know, rocket scientists. And, you know, their dedication is questionable. At the end of the day, if you're not willing to profile, you're going to lose. Eventually, we will get hit again.
But in America gets the government and the system it deserves. This is what it wants. It doesn't watch American president. It watches American Idol.
I saw footage of some teenage actress, some Disney Channel chick, going through airport security. Right, and here she is. She's some like 14 or 15 year old girl, obviously not a terrorist. You know, dressed like a teenager. They put her through that millimeter wave scanner where they can see through her clothes. And here's some, like, fat TSA pervert standing behind her with this creepy-ass look on his face. You know, they just ran her through this so they could see a 15-year-old girl naked.
Right.
That's just sick.
Yeah. I mean, there's been stories of women being put through that scanner two and three times and then hearing laughs from the background where the supervisor says, okay, guys, you've had enough.
What?
That's what you're subjected to as an American to fly. You have to have somebody grope you, or they have to see you naked. I've seen scans of that scanner, man. It's naked.
They want it.
You can see naked people. You see genitals and nipples.
But this is what the people want.
Because people got
scared. Why do they want it? Because they keep on voting for the same crap over and over and over again. They keep throwing away their freedom. And they believe it's security.
Because I think people are voting with their wallets, guys, and that's it. They got a check.
Yep.
They get their entitlement. They're not worried about the country, the future of their children. They're worried about that entitlement check.
I got mine. Screw you.
You see how hard they defend Obama on his failings in the Middle East. Question Obama supporter about whether he dropped the ball on Libya. They swear to God it's not his fault and that we had no idea that if we deposed those leaders, they were going to get radical Islamists in control. It's like, gee, what would have clued you in? The fact that Mubarak himself told you that's what's going to happen?
Well,
I guess about Egypt as long as I have my food stamps.
This is true. You know, Dennis, you hit that one right on the head. That is exactly what some of these Obama supporters are thinking of. They're going, they think that that's a problem over there. You know,
I think they look at him as the Mocha Messiah. I think they believe the man can do no wrong. You know, he is Black Jesus. He's the Mocha Messiah.
You know what,
well,
guys,
again, it comes to political correctness by overlooking the crap that the blacks do.
And it doesn't matter. I question whether there's enough people that think this way that any of this matters. And we're going to know, you know, pretty soon. And that'll be...
Well, how many times have we seen crimes committed by blacks and we overlook it as well? You know, they've suffered so much under white slavery. When the hell are we going to get rid of white guilt and all this other bullshit? And treat everybody equal.
Well, you know, how many times...
Bad guys are bad guys, and good guys are good guys, and who cares what color they are?
How many times do you see some black guy charged with a hate crime for attacking a white guy? Or even a gay guy? They don't even go after him for gays anymore.
But when the hell are you going to see the Black Panthers get arrested for intimidating voters in Philadelphia from 4 years ago? You're not going to see it.
That's what's kind of cracked me up, is now that the one protected class can still victimize other protected class because the gays don't have the political power that the blacks do. Gays were the new favorites, but apparently not.
I bet you during this election the Black Panthers will do it again. I have every belief in my bone that they're going to do it again. You know,
don't forget what Stalin said. Who cares what the vote is as long as you control who does the counting?
Well,
same with the poll.
At a nice Irish voting district in Philly. Okay.
Same with the polls. I mean, the media is in the sack for Obama. What the hell makes you think that the pollsters aren't either?
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, if you go deep into conspiracy theory, who knows even if the counting's correct.
Well, that's
they're
right.
pushing towards the electronic counts. And there was a documentary on HBO called Hacking Democracy that showed they're easily hackable.
Well, didn't Michael Savage just mention, and he's mentioned more than once, that Obama has hired a George Soros-controlled foreign firm that counts ballots?
Right. That's correct. Which is outrageous, but it is correct.
I'd like to see that. You're going to have to send me that link. I've got to see that.
That is legit.
He said on the air.
Yep. I heard that. I was disturbed as heck, and I thought to myself, well, you know what? You could think a million angles on this thing, but at the end of the day, come election day, come the next morning, we're all going to have something to really think about. You know, if you get a shift in Congress and you get a new president, we might be able to slow things down and maybe turn things around if we really strap our belts on. But if you don't, I believe, and I like to use this phrase a lot, but I believe we're done as a country. I think it's time to make a plan and, you know, get your ducks in order, because things are going to get ugly real quick.
When you think of it, you don't have to control the whole nation, just a few precincts in certain states.
I had the conversation with a friend of mine. I think you're going to be a nation of red, blue states. You're going to have people banding together, local economies based on ideology, less so on race.
Will the United States survive as a nation?
It's not even red, blue states. It's a few blue, heavily populated districts. If you look at the red, blue map, the vast majority of the states, actually district to district, vote Republican or conservative. But the heavily populated urban centers vote Democrat.
Yep.
I reject all that. Think of the propaganda that you just said, and you didn't even realize it. Red, blue. Who the hell is the one who said red, blue? Who assigned blue to Democrats and red to Republicans instead of associating red with revolutionary socialist Democrat? Again, the media doesn't want you to think of associate red with Democrat, so they switched it to make it blue Democrat, red Republican.
Well, I look at
it's all psychology.
American. That's the way I looked at it. You know, red-blooded American. Red is the color of valor,
it started with
battle
NBC.
And honor and all that. But
it started with the color on the screen, which color went with what state. And it used to be that blue was Republican and red was Democrat, but someone got the idea, so, psychology is everything. There are hidden persuaders, like it was said years ago in 1968, The Selling of Richard Nixon, and there was a book called The Hidden Persuaders. There's a lot of hidden psychology that we're not even aware of to play with our minds. And it's not a conspiracy issue. That's just a fact.
Let me take a break real quick, guys. I want to ask you a question before the break, and think about this, because this has come to my mind a couple of times, and, you know, a lot of rumbling has gone on about how this election might be the most important election of our lifetime, and people have even harkened back to, you know, the election of Abraham Lincoln. But just take this into consideration, and I'd love to hear your view about it. We're going to take a break real quick. Tell me what you think about what would be considered a 21st century civil war, and what that would look like, and if it's quite possible. All right, when we come back, we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
I think what happened.
Propaganda.
Okay, let's pick up where we left off on the last donation. Have you ever read the original Democrat Party platform? The original included language to protect their so-called right to force people into slavery. But Republicans are the racists because the original Republican Party platform was to abolish slavery? And when liberals are reminded of this, they always say the same thing. Yeah, well, you know what, Zoe? That was a long time ago, and you need to get over it. Really? Okay, well, you know what? Slavery itself was a long time ago. Why don't y'all get over that? Oh, but that's how you liberals are. You're always able to use something as an excuse, like slavery. But that's okay. That's okay. Let's say you can actually use slavery as an excuse. To the Afrocentric, loyal Democrat voting liberals who insist and swear up and down that the black community is still profoundly affected by slavery, even though it happened a long time ago, why don't you still hold the Democrats responsible for trying to force institutionalized slavery? Yeah, you kind of got a funny taste in your mouth right about now, don't you? Yeah, I think it's the taste of them boots you loyal Democrats, Afrocentric liberals always accuse us conservatives of licking. I'm just guessing, because unlike you, as a conservative, I really don't know what these boots taste like. Y'all have been sucking boots so long that you're oblivious to the flavor. Kind of like chewing a piece of gum long after the flavor's gone. And then you accuse black conservatives of being the bootlickers. And we can be sure that these accusations will continue as the liberals accuse me of being a whore and being paid to say these things the GOP writes for me, even though none have yet to prove that anyone writes my scripts but me. White people write Obama scripts all the time, though, and y'all don't seem too mad about him saying all the things that those white liberals want him to say. So anyway, slavery happened long ago. But you still want to use that as an excuse. Well, then be consistent. You should still hold the Democrats responsible for the KKK, Jim Crow, Dred Scott, revocation of civil rights, denial of 40 acres and a mule, segregation, anti-miscegenation, and eugenics. You know that was the Democrat Party. That's why you liberals try to use some lame excuse that the party switched sides, which is a lie anyway. And even that in itself is an admission, because the Democrats had to be the racist party to begin with to be supposedly switched anyway. The Democrat agenda is still the same, to make us subjects of the state. But now they do this under the sugar-coated guise of fairness. And as a buddy of mine, Joe Dan, reminds us, Democrats talk more about fairness than freedom. Look at Joe put y'all back in chains, Biden. It just doesn't register with you that your party was the party that was fighting to keep chains on blacks in the first place, does it? Democrat positions don't amount to freedom. I know you liberals think that things like abortion equals freedom, but it's not exactly a lullaby of liberty for the child now, is it? So then we've got Touré, who tries to bring up names like Lee Atwater and starts backpedaling when F.E. Cupp puts in clear perspective how stupid he sounded.
Notice he says anger twice. He's really trying to use racial coding and access some really deep stereotypes about the angry black man. This is part of the playbook against Obama, the otherization. He's not like us. I know it's a heavy thing to say. I don't say it lightly, but this is niggerization. You are not one of us, and then you are like the scary black man who we've been trained to fear.
Joe Biden makes a racially charged comment, which you and many others on the left called divisive.
Mitt Romney comes out, calls that comment divisive. But because he used the word angry, now his is the racially charged comment. Do you see how dishonest that is?
But I gotta ask, this playbook that Republicans have used for decades? Really? Okay, let's say you're right. Let's say you're absolutely right. Republicans use code words. Code words like, oh, I don't know, angry? Or code words like welfare? Oh my God, that's so evil compared to Democrats who have actually enslaved too many of the black community with welfare. And the Republicans have been trying to break the chains of welfare just as Republicans fought to break the chains of slavery when the party was founded. But Republicans are evil with their code words. That's so evil compared to the actual angry Democrats who would bomb black churches, release dogs, and open up fire hoses on blacks and use clubs on them. Oh my God, but Republicans are so evil, they use the code words. That's so much more evil than Democrats lynching blacks and lynching white Republicans too for daring to stand for blacks. The liberal mindset is so twisted and warped and backward in perspective. It's no wonder why the Bible says don't cast your pearls before swine. They'll drag you into Looneyville with them. You have to keep your engagement with them brief. Only long enough to expose their hatred, projections, their bigotry, their sexism, their straight-up hypocrisy, and their lunacy. And let those who see the exchange see for themselves who the real perpetrators are. I'm Alfonso Rachel with Zonation, and I'll remind y'all to get some ammo to fire back at this loony liberal rhetoric. Get the smart bomb. Grab a copy of my audiobook, Weapon of Ass Destruction, available at my website, alfonsorachel.com. And if you don't get your copy, I'm not going to accuse you of being a right-wing, Bible-thumping, sexist, homophobic racist, but I will say that you must have some sort of fetish for being called a right-wing, Bible-thumping, sexist, homophobic racist without knowing how to readily defend yourself.
President Obama, as Hannity put it, hanging out with a former crack dealer who shot his own brother, Jay-Z. That's hilarious. Oh, that's just me personally. So anyway, I posed the question before we went to a break about what I would consider the 21st century civil war. And let me sort of explain what I mean by this. With all of the class warfare, with all of the talk of, you know, the whole red state, blue state, conservative versus liberal, rich, poor, and all of that other stuff. Do you believe that today that there will be people in this country who believe as though it's us against them in our own country? Do you think that's possible, guys?
Well, yeah, it's hard to define a scenario that's going to happen. Yeah, my scenario, I think, is everything's going to be fine until the currency collapses. And when the currency collapses and the Uncle Sugar handouts quit coming, I think see the cities devolve into chaos and madness. I think that you're going to end up with, you know, urban centers on the east and west coast and in the south just turning crazy. And the only safe places and the only places that are going to make it relatively unscathed are going to be those flyover states nobody talks about, like Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas, Utah, Idaho, maybe Arizona and Nevada. And you may have a central group of states that become the new America.
Yeah, I agree with you exactly. I think the scenario that you're coming up with, because I thought about this as well. I think places like the blue states, like, of course, the coastal divide, so to speak, you know, California, Washington, Oregon, or the East Coast, Massachusetts, New York, D.C., Maryland, those areas, probably even Florida, but these heavily populated cities, so to speak, where you'll see carnage and mayhem.
You've got people who are fully dependent on the government, and when the government's
right.
not there, they're going to lose their minds.
Right, exactly. So those areas I see, those places like literally burning to hell. But the central part of the midsection of the United States, you know, you're Kansas, Nebraska, maybe Indiana, Wyoming, Idaho, those places, even Colorado, Utah, those places won't burn to the ground. Those places
Utah's going to be fine. I mean, the Mormons pretty much have as one of the basic tenets of their religion to prepare for bad times. Every
right.
Mormon
a nation
household
divided
is required,
against itself cannot stand.
Well, every Mormon household is required to have a year's worth of food stored up.
Right. Well, yeah, but
guys,
those places...
You know, kidding aside, my wife and I talk about this all the time. We're actually planning it. I mean, I'm not even kidding. We're gone. It's just a couple of things we need to take care of before we can leave Massachusetts, and I'm out of here. I don't have faith
that
things are going to right itself, and I want to be somewhere where I'm around people of like mind.
Duval?
Yeah, I'm in Mass. That's right. I'm in the great state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, I have a buddy
Commonwealth.
From
we are
Philly
not a state. We are a Commonwealth.
That's right.
My buddy I was in the Air Force with moved. We were in Wyoming together. They moved back to Philly. And he made it in Philly a year before he said, screw this, and moved to Montana.
Well,
so it was the best decision he ever made, was moving to Helena, Montana.
Yeah.
Because
you know,
there's literally nothing to worry about.
But a nation divided against itself just cannot stand. And
I agree.
It's not an economic division. It's a social division.
Right.
We see
absolutely.
It with abortion. And you're
right.
not going to like it, but with social conservatives myself, I see it black and white. Either you kill your children or you let them survive. And a nation that kills its future cannot survive.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the Muslims aborting. They're reproducing.
No, they just
yeah.
kill them when they're 13.
But, you know, I was thinking, you know, Mary has a cousin who lived in New York for a little while. And... how long did they stay, Mary? A year?
Jamie?
Yeah.
No, like 2 months.
They were they moved to New York. They were here for, they were in New York for 2 months.
Yeah, they moved back to New York. They had
right. Yeah, they were right. They're from New York originally and moved away to Florida.
And then to Tampa, and then moved back to New York, and their daughter started acting, you know, frantic and just erratic, and they said, no.
They just had to go home to their own community and just had to get out of there.
Yeah, it wasn't
as
good.
As a Floridian, we would be more than happy to let South Florida secede. We'd be more than happy to let everything from Orlando south just go because we don't need it.
That's definitely going to happen because I know that places that will survive this sort of economic breakdown are going to be areas like in the Panhandle, you know? Like, you know, Florida.
My area will do fine, buddy. This west central coast of Florida will do fine
mm-hmm.
because we are a majority redneck. And rednecks
right.
can pull together and survive. But Miami's going to go pongo.
Oh, yeah, because if you look at some of those poor communities are going to have to do what in order to survive? They're going to have to pillage, and they're going
to
go after.
They're not going to come together. I mean, that's a little
bit. Absolutely. Yeah, they're going to pillage anyone who is within their areas that are rich or who are too wealthy for them, you know, or they believe are, you know, they would consider the enemy. They wouldn't go into places like, you know, in the certain rural areas to go pillage because they would think that those places had nothing for them to gain. Well, they wanted an instant fix, and they believe they're going to, you know, the cities, you know, where the jewelry stores are, the markets are, you know, where
which leads to another question. It begs
sure.
the question, then why is Barry so intent then on disarming America and gutting the Second Amendment? Does he see something that most of America doesn't? Because
when you had Katrina,
you didn't have the government to protect you. You had to protect yourself. In the coming
that's
meltdown
right.
of America, when Miami blows and those other cities, who the hell is going to protect anyone else unless you are armed?
If you look at Katrina, the mayor of New Orleans actually did order a weapons confiscation.
There's footage of, you know, of foreign police forces. I say foreign as in from other states, going door to door and taking 38s from old ladies.
And it's funny because even with the fact that there were so many people running around. Now, I said that I got a lot of heat for this. In 2005, when Hurricane Katrina started taking place, and I was literally screaming to the rafters, look, this place is underwater. I said the best thing for everybody to start doing now is to start getting food, dry clothes, whatever it is they can. If you got to go to the marketplaces in town, get clean clothes, because you do not want to be in your wet clothes walking through all that swamp water and all that other stuff. I said, look, you don't know how long it's going to take the government to get down here. And, of course, people criticize. You know, I mean, how many days did it take FEMA to get down there? Was it three days?
Oh, yeah, and there were private companies that were trying to get there, and the government wouldn't let them in.
Exactly.
There were truckloads full of ice that were held at the border.
Right. FEMA doesn't get there for 3 days. And I told people, so people called up the radio station I was on and were screaming at me going, you know, and this is day one. And people are screaming at me going, Reese, I cannot believe you're actually telling people to loot. And I'm going, I'm not suggesting that anybody loot. I'm not saying run through the goddamn streets and grab a TV. What I'm suggesting you do is to make sure that you have dry clothes. Okay,
I just wish liberals had the same passion for ethics, the rule of law, and the Constitution as they do for free condoms.
There you go.
You saw the picture, I'm sure, the infamous meme that came out of Katrina, the guy they called Looty, who is the brother with the conk wading through water with a basket full of Heineken.
You know, it's funny because you also remember that AP controversy that came up when they showed the white couple. They had a some flotation device. I think it was like one of those little pool floaties or whatever it is. You know, the little things you lay down in the pool. Well, they had beer. They had like a case of Coors Light, some potato chips, and some other food floating on that. And they were walking through the water. And the caption reads, Louisiana residents, scraping for food during the floods, and then they had a black kid with dreads in his hair with a loaf of bread and some other item in his hand, and the caption reads, Louisiana resident caught looting.
if you want to hear an interesting story out of that, Google the term Algiers Point, Katrina.
Okay.
Algiers Point is an area in New Orleans that was, it's kind of like north and it's top high, so they didn't get a lot of flooding. And it's a like middle class white neighborhood. Well, these people got together and formed posses and went out with shotguns and basically ran looters out of their neighborhoods. And apparently killed a bunch of them. And laughed about it. They're like, yeah, we killed a bunch, but step out of our neighborhood.
I think that some of these liberals are going to be as much of a shock during the next meltdown as Alex Haley was when he found out he really was an orphan.
Oh, hey, look, buddy. If you look at Miami, there's a place where all the super rich celebrities live called Star Island. Like Shaq has a place there, and J-Lo and Mark Anthony had a place there. Where do you think those dudes from Homestead are going to head if they need stuff?
They're going after Mark.
They're going to the millionaires' houses.
You're right. They're absolutely right. All right, guys, it's coming in on 10 o'clock as usual. Thank you. Sally B in Massachusetts, Dennis the Menace, and White Money on Reese on the Radio. We'll see you guys tomorrow. We may have to do this again.
Always a pleasure.
The same way we did today. But thank you all. I appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel, the Reese on the Radio.
Right. He's raised his family right. He's fought his way all the way to the top of the Harvard Law Review in a blind test, becomes head of the review, the top editor there. Everything he's done is clean as a whistle. He's never not only broken any law, he's never done anything wrong. He's the perfect.